counties across the board, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, Lake Geneva, and Burlington. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm sitting across two gentlemen who have been incredibly busy with an incredible show and an incredible undertaking for any community theater, namely Stephen Sondheim's amazing masterwork, Sweeney Todd. The Racine Theater Guild's production of Sweeney Todd just opened this past Friday, and it will be running for the next two weekends. We have in our studios this morning, first of all, Doug Instanis, the managing and artistic director of the Racine Theater Guild and the director of this production of Sweeney Todd. And we have the demon barber of Fleet Street with us as well, Davidson Kane, who is undertaking the title role. And it's certainly one of the sternest challenges in all of musical theater. So we're going to be talking with these two gentlemen about this show, about this production, and we'll play a few excerpts along the way from this amazing work. Doug Instanis, Davidson Kane, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thanks for having us.
So, Doug, maybe you could say a word, first of all, about how this found its way onto the schedule of the Racine Theater Guild and what it means for a group like the Theater Guild to take on a show like Sweeney Todd.
Well, it's been on our radar for a long time. I mean, it's a very, very popular show with theater people. Matter of fact, it's just being remounted on Broadway, which is weird how all of a sudden we do things and all of a sudden, you know, it's like the something's in the air that all of a sudden everybody decides, oh, how about Sweeney Todd this season? But I think it really... We were dealing with COVID for a long time, and we decided that the season we would just do something for the actors. A lot of times we do things just for the audience, and Mamma Mia is a good example of that. You know, that we could still be playing Mamma Mia now because it is so popular. But every once in a while, you need to throw kind of a bone to the actors, and this is an actor show. These are people on on people's bucket lists. It's very challenging. You know, you don't get to do Sondheim very often because of the detailed and complexity of his music. And we just said, well, you know what? Who knows what's going to happen with COVID, if they're going to come back or not come back. So let's just do something good. And this seemed to be the right time for us to do that. We had some money in the bank. You know, we don't have to. We did Little Mermaid earlier in the year, and we did that for the families. And this one we'll do for the actors and kind of the theater goers. You know, when you do a dramatic musical, that's very different than musical comedy. You know, Fiddler and Anything Goes and Mamma Mia are all, you know, musical comedy. When we start doing dark, you know, phantom type shows, Les Mis is a good example of where people actually die. You know, people, it's hard. This is a hard-hitting show. It has a lot to say about society and about how we treat each other. So we just, for some reason, thought this was the year. We're coming out of COVID. Let's do something different than we haven't done before.
Have you dealt with Sweeney Todd before this? I mean, in any professional capacity? I mean, have you ever directed it or been in it?
Well, when I was an actor a long time ago, I used to sing Not While I'm Around for auditions. So that was the only, my only, besides watching it, the Angela Lansbury version, and whenever there was a version I could see, you know, whenever a local theater would do it, you know, the Skylight, I saw Skylight's production. So I've never directed it, you know, just been an audience member. And a long time ago, I used to sing Not While I'm Around for audition pieces. I didn't get cast, so it didn't really work out.
So Davidson Kane, we'll learn more about, you know, your kind of your career in musical theater and what you've done at the Guild, but more specifically, just for the moment, explain to our listeners your connection to Sweeney Todd even before being cast in the title role.
Well, you know, let me get a little closer to the microphone there. Sweeney Todd's always been, it was one of the, when I got to college, it was one of the first musicals that I experienced that wasn't The Music Man, Gypsy, Fiddler, you know, like those had the good story, happy-go-lucky kind of stories. This was dark, and it was about people being mean to each other, and it, for some reason, that had an allure to it. And I think that's why it ends up on a lot of actors' bucket lists, is because it's not your typical musical
with a happy ending.
Right, yeah. right, exactly. Where the couple, well, the couple, you know, whether or not they get together, you know,
the people that are alive get together.
The people that are alive that are left, yeah. But I remember watching my roommate in college, my junior year, my senior year, had special access to the AV club, you know, to the AV closet, and so he made sure that we had a VCR and a TV in our room, and we would play, and I don't know how he got his hands on it, but we would play the Angela Lansbury and George Hearn version of Sweeney multiple times, and ever since then it's been always one of those things that's always been in my head, is like, as that role, that's plain Sweeney, has been on my list of things to check off before I go.
But before this, you had been in Sweeney, right, at some point?
I did in the mid-90s. I was in Bangor, Maine, where Maine's my home state, and with the Penobscot Theater Company, we did Sweeney Todd, and I played Judge Turpin as a 25 or 26 year old.
Wow, another big role in this show. So you came to this undertaking with a very, very deep understanding of this.
Exactly.
Show.
Yeah, I mean, I've been singing My Friends in the Shower for 30 years. So.
Well, and now people get to hear you and see you on the stage.
I've had a lot of practice. Yeah,
very, very good. Doug, maybe you could give our listeners, particularly for the sake of those not so well acquainted with the show, something of its background. First of all, its origins, even before Stephen Sondheim got his hands on this intriguing story, and then maybe just sketch out for our listeners at least kind of the basic outline of what this unconventional story is.
Yeah, well, it's an old story, and they did it on Broadway in 1979 when it first opened. And, you know, it's a melodramatic story about a barber who is wrongly accused of a crime, sent away because the judge in town wants his wife. is very interested in his wife. And so they send the barber away. The judge attacks the wife then ends up adopting their daughter becomes his ward. And Sweeney gets out of, escapes from prison in Australia or wherever down under he's at, and comes back. And they don't recognize him, and he believes his wife to be dead, and he wants to have revenge for, his wife's dying, his daughter being taken hostage, and him being sent away and ruining his life. So they don't recognize him, so he joins forces with Mrs. Levitt, who runs a pie shop. And he's recognized by this sham, Pirelli, who's selling elixir and giving haircuts, and he's recognized. And so he tries to blackmail Sweeney, and Sweeney ends up killing him. And then the killing begins, where man devouring man, and we start killing people and making them into meat pies to show the fact that nobody would help Sweeney or his family, that they stood up for this injustice, and they all had a price to pay in his revenge. And so the whole thing is about him trying to take revenge on the judge and Beetle and the people that have wronged him. And through that, there's some beautiful music and some funny songs, believe it or not. there's a song about making people into meat pies, and what a little priest would taste like, and what a lawyer would taste like, and an actor. And while it's very dark, it's very funny, but at all times it's very clever and poignant on how we treat each other, and what happens when revenge is in our heart, and is that the best way to go, and how inhumane we can treat each other, and injustice. And Anthony's got a line, is there any right in this world? Or I can't remember exactly what his line is, but there's no justice. You're just corrupt officers of the law, and where's the justice? And so it has a lot of wonderful messages in this dark, dark story.
Hmm. I'm always so intrigued by the notion that Stephen Sondheim would look at a story like this, and I forget if its first life was as a novel or what it was, but I mean just the that it would even occur to him that this was fertile ground for to create a musical.
What this could be, a musical.
Yeah. Well, I think Christopher Bond that first wrote it, the story a long time ago, but we've long forgotten that. All we remember now is Sweeney Todd.
Right.
Yeah, I think it was. I think the origins of it were in like some of those like the three penny operas and the pantomimes of London back in the day. I don't know, because they would tell these macabre stories.
Right, and of course it's so interesting. And this isn't, as we've kind of already alluded to, this is not everybody's cup of tea. This is not what draws necessarily the most typical musical theater person to the theater. I mean, it is, and yet it has a very, very powerful draw over a certain segment of the population. Mm-hmm. And I suppose it's maybe the same segment of the population that will maybe be drawn to horror movies or drawn to other kinds of dark entertainment. I mean, we don't all want sunny, Bambi stories. We want
rainbows and sunshine.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Davidson, what has it been like for you to step into this production, having already once before been in Sweeney Todd? What has the return to this work been like for you?
It's been 25 years since I last was in the show, so I think this one has been a lot more. I don't know. I know a lot more about the show this time than I did last time, if that makes sense. And I think in part just because of age and maturity, it's like I get more relatable to my character now. That's just from an age perspective, not from a murder perspective. This entire cast and crew have been masterful. There's no other way to say it, and And it's just been a really, really rewarding experience just putting this all together with them. Hmm.
Doug Instinus, I suppose, you know, one of the things you and I can relate to is when you decide to do a big, big show that is so challenging and in which you need wonderful leads and also a wonderful ensemble, when you post those audition notices, you hope that people will come. But I think what one of the things you alluded to is that because this is a show that that talented performers desperately want to have the chance to perform in, you know, we went into this with some optimism that great people would turn out, and indeed that's what happened.
Absolutely. I think more so than I think in most shows that I've directed, the ensemble is so vitally important to this story, because there's it's a story within a story. It's storytelling. Attend the Tale of Sweeney Todd. We start that out right away where we're going to tell you what we're going to, you know, we're going to tell you what you're going to see, and then we tell you, and then we show you, and then we tell you again at the end. And the ensemble comes in and out, and as you know, as music director, the harmonies are so tough. The letter that they have to sing. Mm-hmm. There's when they're singing the song about a letter, and just how do they find their note? Oh my goodness, it's unbelievable. And the quality of musicians that we have all around, from you know the person with the smallest part to the leads, have all been wonderful musicians. Because first and foremost, you know, Sondheim doesn't give it to you. Like, da-da-da-da-da, your note. Nope, doesn't work that way. He gives you about 20 other things or nothing,
right.
And then you're supposed to find your note somewhere that it was played, you know, 5 minutes ago or something like that. And especially when they're doing that organ music, when Mrs. Lovett is playing that organ, it's like, where is that note? There's no note there. She's just making that up. So I've been very, very, very impressed. And that's the thing. This show is really about the music. It's about putting the actors in a position to sing the songs in the right space and sing them well so the audience can understand them. And we've certainly done that. I just, you know, after the first weekend, people come out and go, wow, where do you get these people? You know, and it's, well, they're all local people and they wanted to do the show. And so it is pretty amazing that we can get that quality of musician to spend, you know, what, 3 months at the Theater Guild. It's just amazing to me. So we're very lucky.
So you touched on the opening lines. I mean, the very first line sung in the show is "Attend the Tale of Sweeney Todd." I mean, what a beautiful turn of phrase by Mr. Sondheim, responsible for both the music and the lyrics. So let's listen to the very opening number, or part of it anyway, what's known as the Ballad of Sweeney Todd.
Attend the tale of Sweeney Todd. His skin was pale and his eye was odd. He shaved the faces of gentlemen who never thereafter were heard of again. He trod a path that few have trod, did Sweeney Todd. A demon barber of Fleet Street. He kept a shop in London town, of fancy clients and good renown. What if none of their souls were saved? They went to their maker impeccably shaved. By Sweeney Todd, the demon barber of Fleet Street.
Demon barber of Fleet Street. rats would sell them. Skin for skin, with skin for skin, with skin for skin, with skin for skin.
Attend the tale of Sweeney Todd.
Attend the tale of Sweeney Todd.
He served a dark and a vengeful god.
He served a dark and a vengeful god.
What happened then? Well, that's the play, and he wouldn't want us to give it away. Not Sweeney.
Not Sweeney Todd. The demon on the feet. Sweet.
The Ballad of Sweeney Todd. We are talking about the Racine Theater Guild's production of Sweeney Todd, which just opened this past Friday. We're talking with Doug Instanis, the managing and artistic director of the Racine Theater Guild and the stage director of this production. And we have with us in our studios as well, Davidson Kane, who is undertaking the title role of Sweeney Todd, the demon barber of Fleet Street. Davidson, I want to make sure that we don't run out of time. I want to give you a chance to kind of talk about your long career at the Racine Theater Guild and some of the things that you have done there, which by and large are roles drastically different from the role of Sweeney Todd. Of course, there really isn't another role in musical theater quite like Sweeney Todd, so it's going to be different from everything else, I guess, no matter what. But give our listeners at least a sense of some of the things that you have done on that stage.
Yeah, I may need some help, Doug, to remember some of them. But I started off in 2011, kind of an interesting story. I'd taken a break from theater as my kids were growing up, and it was my oldest son, Spencer, who really wanted to be in Willy Wonka at the Racine Theater Guild. And he had already done Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing there. And he convinced me to audition, and I had a work mishap that had kind of screwed me up, and I was gonna not just say, you know what, I'm not gonna audition, but because he was like, you gotta do it. So I did it so I could be with him, and got cast as the Candyman in Willy Wonka. That was 2011.
Wow, from
from the Candyman to the Demon Barber.
Wow, now that is a journey.
Yeah. Some of the more memorable roles, I think Tevye as in Fiddler on the Roof is always going to be near and dear to my heart. And then Ghost of Christmas Present in Christmas Carol, the musical version of that. Help me out. What else?
Les Mis.
Oh yeah, Thénardier and Les Mis. That was a lot of fun. We still joke about that. And that's, you know, just,
he's a dark character.
Yeah. He's more slimy, I think, than dark. But that's, you know, we talk about these shows in the green room, you know, as we're rehearsing, and like a lot of the people that I'm working with on this show are the same people I worked with on Les Mis, and the same people I worked with on Fiddler, and the same. So you have this just, and that's just such the beauty of community theater, is that it really is a family, and it really is a community within itself.
Sure, you know? That's right. I mean, a couple of your daughters in Fiddler are in Sweeney Todd, among other connections that we can draw.
You were in also A Christmas Story.
Oh yeah,
Wait Until Dark.
Going back, I did Night at the Nutcracker, Sherlock Holmes, Three Musketeers.
Yeah.
That was a good one. Yeah. So it's been like 12 or 13 shows, I think, in the last 12 or 13 years.
Wow.
Let's make it 13, so that's a very unlucky number to do Sweeney Todd.
Very good. So, Doug, tell our listeners a little bit about the process of getting this show on its feet, beyond the matter of this cast learning this score, although fortunately a lot of them came to it with background with the score and weren't starting at square one. But beyond just mastering this really difficult score are a whole host of other issues that were more in your domain in terms of getting this show physically onto the stage. So what was that process like?
Well, besides getting the outstanding cast and then turning them over to you to teach them to sing, this is a very difficult show for crew. We have somewhere around 300 light cues and sound cues that our stage manager, Lori Russ, is responsible for. It's huge. It's a huge show. On a thrust stage is very tricky scenically. You know, you scene changes, where will you put people, lighting, how you move them around the stage. The thrust is very difficult. And, we started off with the scenic design on how are we going to kill people and have them fall through the floor. So if you don't know the show, they get their throat cut, and then he adjusts his chair so they fall through a hole in the floor into the coal chute and into the ovens, right?
Into the bakehouse,
yeah. Bakehouse. So that became research and development, and thank goodness we have such crew people that are willing to put their bodies on the line. So, we tried that. Nope, we got to have a different angle on the chair. Nope, okay, that one worked. Anybody hit their head? No. Nope. Okay, well, let's we tested it out on the crew first and then the actors. And so a lot of it, the whole set design has to do with the chair and how we're going to do that. And various people have done it different ways. They've, done red scarves. They've done paint on people's faces. They've done the realistic cutting of the throat with blood squirting everywhere. With the set design, we have multiple locations and trying to make that happen relatively quickly. So, that whole process comes in while you're working with the singers on how we're going to stage it, where the props going to be, who's making what. And again, they're all volunteers except for our set designer. The props people, the lighting people, the stage managers, the costume people. What a huge amount of work Ian Anderson and his crew put in to try to make this happen. So I think initially it's what is this concept going to be? And you and I had talked about a bunch of different versions. We've seen staged versions where people are in all stage blacks. We've seen realistic versions. We've seen high-tech versions, modern versions. And how are we going to approach that? And after looking at a bunch of versions, I really wanted to focus on this is a storytelling. This is a bunch of actors getting out there and telling a story. And that's what happens. In the beginning, we all get out on stage. We say we're going to tell you this story. And all of a sudden, we go into a more realistic version of it. We start off kind of as a staged version, and then we go into a real version. At the end, we all the dead bodies get up and they sing again. So we finish the story at the end. So basically, just trying to figure out the concept and then making sure that the production staff has what they need to do. Poor Jill Nider is making meat pies all day long, she comes in, I got a new batch of meat pies because we've got 24 people in the cast and we go through meat pies. So I know it's been
so
a lot of
those work. Are real pies?
They are real pies. They do not eat them because she's painted them, but they started off real and then she stuffs them and she shellacks them so that they stick around a little bit longer.
Okay.
So anyway, it's been a lot of fun, and then we get the actors involved, and this is not a big dance show, so there's not a lot of tap dancing numbers as we kill people. It's basically a couple solos, a little bit of movement, and letting the actors sing this beautiful music and hit your mark and look good in the light and sing away.
I asked you before we went on the air if there was something in particular that you wanted to play, and one of the first songs you mentioned is the song My Friends. So before we hear a little of that, just curious why you like it so much. And Davidson, you can talk about it too, since it's a song that you get to sing.
Well, it's funny, Davidson and I were talking about it because I asked him the same question. I said, what's your favorite song? Oh, and he immediately said My Friends. And I said, that's mine too. It's dark, it's sweet, it's wonderful. And of course, Davidson and Mrs. Lovett, Danielle, do it wonderfully. He finds his razors and he's looking at it and he's got these crazy eyes going and it's sweet and a love song to the razor. And Mrs. Lovett, I love you too. And she's trying to be involved in his life and she's saying sweet things to him that he's not paying attention to because he's all captivated by stuff. And I know they have a really the two actors have a really great connection, and that music is just beautiful. And I'm drawn to that, and it's kind of sums up the show with this dark beauty. You know, it's very a dark song.
I think you just hit the nail on the head. It's a very darkly beautiful song, and he's singing a love song to his razors, and he's telling them, "We'll do wonders, won't we?" You know, and he's not thinking about I'm going to be the best barber in London. Yeah. He's thinking, I'm going to go find these guys and kill them.
drip rubies, right?
Right. So at the end, he says, you'll soon drip rubies. You know, if your shine was merely silver, friends, you will drip rubies. You shall drip precious rubies.
And, yeah. Meaning blood, right?
Right. Yeah. That's the last thing he's in the part of the song he sings. So it sets up so much of the show just in this one long, this beautiful melody.
Right. You know? And, of course, the way, as you said, that woven together is what you're singing with what Mrs. Lovett is singing.
Yes.
Danielle Cater's in our cast, who's wonderful in the role of Mrs.
Lovett. Absolutely, yeah.
And the way that spins together. And that's one of the moments in which this work feels operatic, because one sees that all the time in opera, that different characters are simultaneously singing profoundly different things or expressing profoundly different emotions in the same moment. And in the world of opera, that works, and in the world of this kind of sophisticated musical theater, it works as well. Mm-hmm. All right, here is at least some of this exceptionally wonderful song from Stephen Sondheim's Sweeney Todd. This is My Friends.
My, them mandals is chase silver, ain't they?
Silver, yes. These are my friends. See how they glisten. See this one shine. How he smiles in the light. My friend, my faithful friend. Speak to me, friend. Whisper. Listen, I know you've been locked out of sight all these years. Like me, my friend, well, I've come home to find you waiting. Home, and we're together, and we'll do wonders. There, my friend.
I'm your friend.
Come,
too,
let
Mr.
me
Todd.
Hold you.
If you only knew,
now,
Mr.
With
Todd,
a sigh,
ooh, Mr. Todd,
you
you're
warm,
warm
in my hand, my friend.
You'll come home.
My clever friend.
I always had a fondness for you, I did.
Rest now, my friend.
Never you fear,
soon
Mr.
I'll
Todd.
Unfold.
You can move in here, Mr. Todd.
Splendors you never have dreamed all your days.
We'll be your
my lucky friend.
I'm your friend.
Till now your shine was merely silver.
Silver's good enough for
friends,
me, Mr.
You shall drip rubies. You'll soon drip precious. At last, my arm is complete again.
A bit of the amazing song My Friends from Stephen Sondheim's Sweeney Todd. By the way, the excerpts we are sharing today are from the original cast recording featuring Len Carew and Angela Lansbury in these two crucial roles. And I was thinking we should listen to something more with the crucial role of Mrs. Lovett, who was, of course, Sweeney Todd's partner in crime, and I thought we would listen to a little bit of the song By the Sea, because I think it underscores the fact that for as dark as this show is, there is just the right amount of brightness and lightness to kind of offset the darkness. But Davidson, maybe tell us the crucial role of Mrs. Lovett in all of this, and what it's like to be stage partners with Danielle Caters in that role.
Well, you know, there are few people that I've worked with like this as a scene partner who you just sort of like get it. You just get each other from the get go. You know, you get not only do you get the characters, but you get how the characters relate. Hmm. And so working with Danielle has been just phenomenal from the start. But Mrs. Lovett, the character, you know, this is something I'm not used to. I'm kind of used to being the funny one in the show, you know, like being the one that comes in. But I have to be the straight man to her now. Mm. And she is brilliant. Like, especially in By the Sea, that always gets a huge response, because it's a funny song. It's kind of light, but and then I have to play against that as just being deadpan and serious through the whole number.
So explain why she is singing this, the character of Mrs. Lovett.
She's convinced herself that because as we're selling these meat pies, we've now got a respectable business, and that Sweeney needs to forget his revenge motive. And in a year or so, she says, once we've saved up enough money, she really wants to move to the sea and live by the sea, because it reminds her of her childhood.
So here is some of this song called By the Sea, sung by Mrs. Lovett, with disinterested interjections from Sweeney Todd.
Oh, Mr. Todd, I'm so happy I could eat you up, I really could. You know what I'd like to do, Mr. Todd. What I dream, if the business stays as good, where I really like to go in a year or so. Don't you want to know?
Of course.
Do you really want to know?
Yes, yes, I do.
By the sea, Mr. Todd, that's the life I have it. By the sea, Mr. Todd, oh, I know you'd love it. You and me, Mr. T, we could be alone in a house what we'd almost own down by the sea.
Anything you say.
Wouldn't that be smashing? With the sea at our gate, we'll have kip and herring. What have swum to a strait from the Straits of Bering. Every night in the kip, when we're through our kip, I'll be there slipping off your slippers by the sea with the fishy splashing by the sea. Wouldn't that be smashing down by the sea?
Anything you say, anything you say.
I can see us waking, the breakers breaking, the seagulls squawking. While you write a letter, unless we got better to do.
Anything you say.
Think how snug it'll be underneath our flannel when it's just you and me and the English Channel in our cozy retreat, kept all neat and tidy. We'll have chums over every Friday by the sea.
Anything you say.
Don't you love the weather?
By the Sea, one of the songs from Act Two of Stephen Sondheim's Sweeney Todd, sung by the character of Mrs. Lovett. Doug Instanis, going into this, because it is such a dark show, and a show that, I mean, a fair amount of its subject matter is actually downright gruesome and certainly can be conveyed as such. Talk for a moment about what you thought about as the stage director in terms of what to do with the darkest elements of this story, how graphic to be. I mean, and what kind of things does a stage director weigh in his or her mind in making some of those choices?
Well, I think part of it is, you know, practical outcomes with, I mean, the cutting of the throats is the biggest, can be gruesome. However, I've seen very little of, in the movie version, you know, blood, it's Tim Burton, so there's blood going to be squirting everywhere. And no stage version does that. One, it's just not practical. People, blood everywhere, people slip, fall, gets on costumes. And it's not needed. Because it's really, except for, you know, the killing of the judge, it's just business. To, you know, I'm going to cut your throat and make into a meat pie, and that's what we do. And I'm singing a love song about my daughter and about my life while I'm doing that. And the juxtaposition is, I think, is the key to that. It's not, oh, look, we're killing these people. It's a violent act is happening while someone is thinking about beauty and love and tenderness and
right.
all of that. Yeah. So I don't think that's hard to think about. I think what was really hard to think about is the judge's role in the show, because the judge lusts after his ward, and there's a song about that, and it's a very sick song with this the judge fantasizing about this woman, and that to me took a lot of how are we going to do that. You know, it talks about him whipping himself. It talks about him spying on her and being, you know, naked in the script. So, well, we're not going to be doing a naked scene at the Racine Theater Guild. Sorry, guys, not happening. So staging that, you know, in a movie version is a lot easier than in a play. And that, I think the graphic comes in the sickness of his mind. And I think that's, you know, we're pretty much doing that with lights. You know, we sit him in the spotlight. We have red light that starts to grow as his lust grows and his insanity grows, and then we come back to that. And I think it's still very effective. I think people, and I think Tom Storino does a very nice, sick job of singing that song. I think that's where the graphic comes in, is the subject matter more so than it does the violence, because the violence is pretty comical. In fact, every time, except for the two at the end, which I won't tell you about, when he's killing people, they all laugh. They think it's funny. You know, they cut the throat and, oh, down the chute. Next one up, cut the throat, down the chute. And people find it.
You mean in the audience?
In
yeah.
The audience,
I noticed
yeah.
the same thing.
Yeah.
And that was kind of interesting how, I mean, I'm sure not every single person, but quite a few people in the audience are just kind of able to place themselves in this particular
yeah.
world
yeah.
and within the confines of this particular story. Davison, I want to play just a little bit of the beautiful song Pretty Women that your character Sweeney sings mm-hmm. with the judge as yeah. he is in the barber chair the first time. Mm-hmm. Just say a quick word about what's going on here.
Sure. Well, where do I start with it? Okay, so Sweeney has managed to convince the Beatle that he's a great barber. And so the Beatle recommends Sweeney to the judge, who then shows up at Sweeney's place for a shave. And so this song is basically Sweeney kind of lulling the judge into a buddy relationship or a kindred spirit relationship so that he can gain his trust in order to then build up to cut his throat.
So here is a little bit of Pretty Women.
Pretty women, fascinating, sipping coffee, dancing. Pretty women are a wonder. Pretty women sitting in the window, standing on the stair. Something in them cheers the air. Pretty women, silhouetted, stay within you,
glancing,
stay forever,
breathing like
pretty women, pretty women, blowing out their candles.
Just a little bit of this intriguing song of pretty women. And one thing we've not yet touched on, and I think we really need to, is the presence in this show and in our production of young people who bring a very different sort of color to the proceedings, the young love interest couple of Anthony and Joanna, and also the young Toby who works for Mrs. Lovett. Just say a word about what that adds to this.
Well, Toby is just a wonderful character who has been mistreated by Pirelli, and then he finds what he believes is a home and a family and someone who cares for him and is sweet and kind to him, which is Mrs. Lovett. And he unwillingly helps out in Denver, but his innocence, I think Sondheim needed someone to be innocent. And here's Toby, who gets caught up in these things and is just trying to live his life and be nice and sweet, and has a gorgeous song, Not While I'm Around, you know, so I'll protect you, you know, nobody's going to harm you, not while I'm around. You know, demons are howling everywhere, I'll send them packing, or I don't care, I've got ways, right? And this little kid thinks he's going to protect the people that he loves, and he gets caught up in this, unwilling, and then they turn against him, and I'm not going to give away the ending, because those of you that don't know that, but I think it's the innocence of life and, you know, on how that can be manipulated by darker forces. And I've read a number of things on Joanna and Anthony, which is, you know, people write their doctoral thesis on those characters. You know, Joanna, kiss me, marry me on Sunday. You know, the whole world's coming around, coming down on her, and all she wants is someone to kiss her and be pretty, and she forgets her purse, and, you know, she needs these things. And this flighty, again, innocence, caught up in this and manipulated by evil forces, and that I think Sondheim talks about society, and, you know, in that time period, you know, women looked pretty in dresses and were taken care of by men and didn't have a role, didn't have a say, weren't independent, couldn't be independent without, you know, a person. Mm-hmm. And so it leaves us with Anthony, who is trying to do what's right in the world, try to protect the people that he loves. He saves Todd in the beginning. Talks about being a good Christian man, and that's what you do. You protect the people. And he has a very, I think he's probably the moral compass. He knows what's right and what's wrong.
Yeah.
And what he will do to protect the people that he loves. And he will, even when he's left with, you know, to kill somebody, he can't do it. Mm. That's not who he is. And I think to a certain degree that's what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. Anthony, who is a young man, a new generation of what's right in society, who will fight for what's right for people that he loves, and has a moral compass that he won't go too far. So pay attention to Anthony.
So we have two more weekends of Sweeney Todd performances at the Racine Theater Guild, and people are encouraged to go to racinetheater.org or to call 633-4218, area code 262, to secure tickets for this amazing production of this incredible show, Sweeney Todd, by Stephen Sondheim. Doug Instanis, the stage director, Davidson Kane. I especially appreciate your presence here, Davidson. You should be sleeping off this demanding weekend you just had as Sweeney Todd, but I'm so glad you were willing to come and be part of the morning show today, and thank you
pleasure.
So much. And best wishes with all the remaining performances to come.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And Doug Instanis, good to have you here as well. Here is a little bit of Anthony's big song, Joanna.
One day I'll steal you. Till I'm with you, then I'm with you there. Sweetly